Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, citizens of Paragon and Millennium Cities. It's 6:34 p.m. East on the East Coast. It's Monday night. We're operating from the Paragon Radio News Satellite of a high altitude of 6.1 feet above sea level. I'm your host, Pogo Man, and this is Paragon Radio. Hope you had a good weekend, everybody. Hope if you celebrate Hanukkah, you're having a wonderful Hanukkah season. And hope you're getting ready for Christmas. It's only 19 days away. And along with me tonight is my co-host, the one, the only. Some people say he's mad. Some people say he's Viking. Others just say he's mad Viking.
It's a small world after all. It's a small world after all. 'Cause it's Walt Disney Day. It's a small, small world. Seriously, it is.
Is it Walt Disney Day?
Yep.
Is it? That's so funny because my stepsister and her husband, they took their kid to Disney last week. They just got back Thursday night. Thursday afternoon.
They missed it. They missed it. They were doing
so
a whole
funny. They missed it. Oh, that's so funny. They missed it by a couple of days. That is funny. They missed.
And the fact that it's Walt Disney Day, you know where we should have done our show? Do you know where we should have done our show?
Hold on. You know where we really should have done our show? And I know that. We should have done our show in a little room. Set back. That's right. All the birds sing word and the flowers croon. In the diggy, 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 diggy room. Welcome to our tropical hideaway. You lucky. Ah, yes. Well, you know what? We're only $220 short of our goal of $1,000 for extra life. If people donate, we'll do the remainder of our shows of the year. There's not many left. If we raise that to 220, we will do the remainder of our shows in the Tiki Room. Okay, that's enough. That's all they're getting. That's all they're getting. Unless we go, once we get back there, then we'll do this. We'll do the show there.
Yep, and we'll have the zombie rock band in the background.
That's right. Everybody can show up and have free drinks on the bartenders and the tiki masks and everything. And what's great is there's a tailor up there and everything. You can change your costumes up there for free. Well, not for free. I mean, everything's there in one spot.
But remember, it's only in the tiki room. We will not have that in the orbit room.
That's right.
I haven't done him in a long time.
That's right. But it, and isn't his sidekick, what was the sidekick's name? Tiki, tiki, tiki.
Yeah.
And his sidekick's name is Tiki. Tiki, Tiki. So it is a Tiki. It's the Orbit Tiki Room. Tiki, 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 Tiki.
Yeah, but he's just, he's the Tiki, but it's not the Tiki Room. It's the Orbit Room. Captain Tiki, Orbit. Tiki. Yes.
That's right. See, it all fits together. It all ties together.
And City of Titans, you have not called us yet for voicing Captain Orbit.
Yet.
Come on.
And Tiki, Tiki, Tiki.
We see updates, we announce it full-heartedly, ready to go, and he blows the whistle the least on yours. So come on.
I don't think I've ever blown the whistle on them.
Well, you did a couple of times.
Well, once or twice, but nothing. You know.
Yeah.
Oops.
So yeah, come on. As I hop to get the AFK off. Really, they got to fix the timer on the AFK.
It's ridiculous. It's like 15 seconds. It's like, if you stand still for more than 30 seconds, we're going to time you. Holy mackerel.
I'm going to take the ops, look at the ops. It's just, you know, maybe they added something, you know.
Well, I think it's a way so people leave you alone. So, like, go away. I'm not here. But that just gets people just – gets the trolls to bother you even more. So,
well, I don't want Blooper Man to come around again.
That's what I mean.
And
okay, how come your name is blue and mine is yellow?
I don't know.
I'm just noticing that. Like, some people have yellow names and some people have blue names.
Are you in transition like a rogue or a vigilante? Or?
No, not that I know of. Are you?
No. I mean, I flip sides because I'm working on badges and I'm up to 998. I hear wrangling. Well, you cut that out.
Ooh, good for you.
The thing is, you won't get 1,000 because as soon as you get 1,000, automatic badge 1,001.
Oh, really? So you can't have 1,000 automatically?
Yeah, you cannot stay on 1,000. You just 1,001 because they give you the 1,000 badges.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I say, how about a little bit of just staying at 1,000 to have the fanfare or something, you know? I did it! Paying 1,001.
Oh. I'm trying to see where my badge count is. Where did you see your badge count again?
Okay, go to menu, and then you go to personal info, then you go to
personal
badges.
Personal info, okay. Badges, thank you. Yep, okay. Oh, yeah. Wow.
And yes, we need those stinking badges because some of them comes up with nice little tricks.
Wow. Only have 111. Oh, God. You know, version one of this game, I had like you, I had a whole hell of a lot more than 111.
Yeah. No, this is the most I've ever had.
No, back in the day, I was like you. I had the badges.
Yeah.
I had like all the badges. Now it's like, are you kidding me?
No,
I had all the exploits.
When it was live, Rain would go like, I got more badges than you. It's like, okay, I'm just working on all these storylines first. And then I got rid of all the storylines. I was like, okay, now we turn up the heat.
Oh, unbelievable. All right, I hate to do this. I'm being called in the other room for a family emergency. I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
I'm muting my mic. I'll be right back. So you take over the news or whatever you got to do. Keep them occupied. I'll be right back. Hopefully it won't be too long. I don't know what the emergency is, but I'll be back.
Okay. All right. So with that note here, like I said, we're over here on City of Heroes on the stairs of Atlas Park. I'm assuming Pogo Man is also at Paragon. Champions. Let's learn to talk. On Champions and WCOC. Can't give off a list of who's listening because I'm on one game. It's the one time where I'm doing something and I stay on one game just so, you know, the computer has like a day of rest. But for those listening on Champions, I do have my Discord up and make it go like, I am here. Imitate one of the people from Whosville going, we are here, we are here, we are here. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, excuse me. Let's see. What was in the news? I just had something, too, here, and I was looking at it. Yeah, but like I said, it is Walt Disney Day. Okay. Captain Superman and Alan are in WCOC. All right. The reason why it's Walt Disney Day's birthday is December 5th. So why the 6th? Basically, it's always observed on the first Monday in December. Then, of course, we all know what happened when he moved over, became a drafter and anchor for Commercial Arts Studios. He started off a small studio, produced a pilot film, and, of course, the ever-famous Steamboat Willie, and it took off from there, from Mickey Mouse to Minnie, Donald, Pluto, Goofy. And how to observe Walt Disney Day? Go to the Walt Disney birthplace, the Hometown Museum, or the Family Museum. Go to Disneyland Park, Walt Disney World, or another Disney. Watch an animated short or feature-length film released in the Walt Disney Company. Bake a Disney-themed cake, write a documentary, or a biography about Walt Disney. We have to bake a cake. Cue Softy. but there are a few animated shorts you can look at YouTube, you know, so you're covered there. So that's a good thing. So, yes, happy. I don't know how old he would have been. Let's see. What year was he born? That's a good question. He would have been. Yeah. 121 years old. If he was still alive, but as some say, he's cryo frozen. There we go. Just shorten it. So who knows? Okay, so with that in mind, wait a minute. Am I seeing a blooper man attack here because I found myself moved? No blooper man. All right, so, yep. And no, I don't have really a favorite Walt Disney right out of the gate. So there are a few memorable or infamous moments. Those who grew up in the 70s remember the live-action movies they really shouldn't have, you know, like From Outer Space. The only way you could talk is through because it has a magical collar. That was a good one, yeah. And Disney is, yes, responsible with the black hole. And you got old Bob, and somewhere there's an old man Bob trying to make a costume that looks like Bob from the Black Hole movie. Yeah, it was like for a while Disney was kind of floundering until we got to The Little Mermaid, and then boom, he came right back up screaming. All right, so, let's see, what else here? Don't mind me, I just got to check on someone here. Oops. Okay. Let's see. There was news on Ghostbusters, more news on Ghostbusters, and the fact that it's, doing very well, very, very well. And just trying to speed up the process so I can see recent, past 24 hours. Oh, that's the one I was looking for. There it is here. Because of the success of the Ghostbusters, because it grossed more than $100 million at the box office. There may be a Ghostbusters ride at Disney World. Let's see. This is what Jason Reitman would like to see in a potential Ghostbuster theme ride. The chase sequence in the Ghostbusters Afterlife with Phoebe hanging out of the side of the Ecto-1. Flying across the corners trying to catch Mother. I think I want to live. I made it because I'm trying to relive fantasies of riding the DeLorean or riding the speeder bikes on Endor and Return of the Jedi. So,
what fantasies are you trying to live?
No.
Huh?
Jason Wright, because of the success of Ghostbusters Afterlife, it crossed 100 million.
Yeah.
There is talk there may be a Ghostbuster ride in Walt Disney World.
Oh, very cool.
And Jason Reisman's version is you get to ride with Phoebe in the modified Ecto-1 with the extending seat.
Wait. What does Phoebe have to do with Ecto-1?
Remember in the scene? Yeah. Egon's
kid. I didn't see the movie yet.
Oh. Well,
okay,
you saw
the
promo.
Stop.
But you did see the promo.
I didn't know that was Egon's kid. I didn't know who was who. I saw the trailers. I wanted to be surprised, really. I saw the trailers of Paul Rudd. I didn't know who the kids were.
Well,
okay,
even
the
in
mom
the,
was
even
Egon's
in the
kid.
Promo, even in the promo, it said there was a uniform that said Spengler. Not Spengler.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Not Spengler.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Spengler. What am I talking about? I'm thinking Beckman.
Spengler. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So in the promo, you know, she's sitting in the seat. All of a sudden, the side door opens up. She ejects out, and she's still sitting in the seat. She's like, "This has got a sidecar seat? Cool!" So Jason Reitman would like to have the ride where you're riding with Phoebe, and she's sitting in the extended seat. Chasing the blue ghost, which I will not give the name away because you have not seen it yet.
Right.
You saw the blue ghost, but I'm not going to give you the name.
Okay, please don't. Now, what I find funny is, last week we previewed the inner tube emotes, right? This week, the winter has come. Game of Thrones reference. Winter has come to Paragon City. All the water has iced up.
In Atlas Park.
Oh, not the other zones?
Nope. The other zones, you can still swim.
Okay, I was going to say, what the hell? It's like, we have given you inner tube emotes that you can use only in water. But we have iced up all the water for the next month.
And the winter event has started in Champions. You will see the tree is up in Rensen.
It's a prelude. The winter event doesn't start till this Thursday.
Right. I said the tree, not the decorations.
Right. But you said the winter event has started. You said it started. It hasn't started.
The fact that the tree is up, it's a start.
Right. It's going to start. Right. It's a prelude to it. It's like, by the way, wink, 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 wink. We all thought it was going to start. We thought it was going to start already. It just says winter's in the air. And it is snowing. It's lightly snowing like it is here. I don't know if any water is iced up, though, in Millennium City. I didn't check on that.
The only water I know is that it's like the, Detroit, Michigan, you know, Lake Michigan.
Right. I don't know if the water iced up yet. But, I mean, by Champions HQ, they had the lake, they had the water over there. Like those little bodies of water.
That reminds me. Someone came up with
like you see over there. By the statue of Atlas, the water right there has iced up.
Yeah,
that's what I meant.
But someone came up with an interesting notation. Now, assuming that in the Millennium City map that is somewhat connected to Lake Michigan, where's the Edmund Fitzgerald, which sunk, if you remember. They're going to put a sunken ship.
Which one?
The Edmund Fitzgerald.
I think that's replaced by the Richty ship.
And we have Winter Lord in Atlas Park.
Where?
Somewhere, because it just flashed. There is a Winter Lord is approaching.
Huh. I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, big blue letters.
On across the screen?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Sure
speaking of which, I see in chat, names you should not call your superhero. Zip Boy.
No, I saw that, yes.
Yes. Wreak havoc with the pus of justice. You stop!
May I? That's why I wear goggles. get me in the face.
God forbid he sneezes.
People are asking, where is WL? Is WL up? I remember the WL fiat, the first
on the
Winter
bridge
War
above
fiat
the lake. On the bridge above the lake. In other words, by the train.
Right over there. I can see the bridge. If you look over there in the distance, you can see the silhouette of the bridge. There's the famous lake, and there's the bridge. Okay. So, oh, there's the coordinates. 845.6. There's 00. Minus 637.7. If you know those coordinates, you too could go fight the Winter Lord in Millennium City. Paragon City. Sorry, too many cities. Paragon City. Not Millennium City. There's no Winter Lords in Millennium City. Everyone in Millennium City is like, what? No, Paragon City. No Winter Lords in Millennium City for us to fight. But you remember the first fiasco? The Winter Lord fiasco? They were trying to drum up business. Oh, God. They were trying to drum up business. They gave out so much XP for these Winter Lords. It was like all anybody did was sit around. So they had figured out that if you put a team together, right, one person has travel power, one person scouted out, one person has teleport team, they teleport everybody to the Winter Lord. Everybody just sat around waiting, and it got to the point everybody knew in each zone where the Winter Lords were. So everybody just waited and waited and waited. And then you had all these lobby teams fighting these Winter Lords, building up, building up, building up. Then it got to the point that heroes who honestly, like myself, like real build heroes, wanted to do the Terra Volta respect, right? We're getting controllers. We're getting complained at that they didn't have teleports. Like, why do I need teleport? I fly. Well, weren't you doing the Winter Lord event? Yeah, but I built my hero the way he's supposed to be built. Every controller is supposed to have teleport. No, we're not. We're not supposed to have teleport. Why are you asking me this? Every controller is supposed to have teleport and team teleport. No, we're not. That's a misconstrued idea from the ridiculous Winter Lord event. Because what happened was they put out, you know, the box sets they were selling at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And they put all these gifts in there that you could get for your hero at level 1 that level 30s didn't even have. Like, holy shit. Double XP for the entire, for 30 days. Like, are you shitting me? And this and that. And all these devices to help you fly. And this, like, wow, that's great. So you get people doing the respect trial, had no idea what they were doing. You had a blaster who had better, who set themselves up to be better healers. It's like, oh my God, do you know what you're doing? It's like, dude, go to the forums, read the blaster guides.
Oh,
there
now.
Was.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Go ahead. Oh,
because no. Well, I was a force fielder, and I was explaining to them that I have one of my force fields to sit over the core. I could defend the core. I was like, okay, fine. And all of a sudden, this blaster is sitting there. Well, I have to go AFK for about an hour, so I'm going to sit here. No, you're not. If you think you're going AFK for an hour, you're off the team. Where the hell do you think you're going? Never mind, I'll stay. Good, because you're going to fight. And everybody agreed, he's going to sit here and bubble the core, and I'm going to help defend the core. So it takes a hell of a lot more hit points. I'm going to bubble everybody from here. Between waves, I'm going to go get a red bubble, and I'm going to defend this thing. Okay. 10 minutes later, she's sitting there. I'm like, she's sitting here, and she's not doing anything. 20 minutes later, not doing it, we kicked her from the team. And she got all bent out of shape. And it turns out we got back and she's yelling and bitching. She's like, oh yeah, she's done this before. She hardly does anything and she gets to the main fight and she miraculously disappears. In other words, she was one of those Winter Ward babies, didn't know what she was doing and didn't want to fight for her respect token.
Hey, hey.
And then one of her friends who knew what they were doing was going to help her respect her hero. And the rest of us like, you know what? We're weeding out the bad seeds. So
speaking
I told the guy, you know what?
Oh,
we're going to wait for you. I told him, we're going to wait till you get here. The ones without travel power. Because when I first played, I was happy as shit to get to level 14 to get my first travel power. Because that was a rite of passage back in the day. I mean, now it's level 6, I think you can get it. But now, you know, at first it was like you had level 6, you get your first tier travel power. Level 14, you got your main travel power, and you were happy as anything to get it. And it was the coolest thing. That was your, like, you know, hey, now I could really move around this place. And it was a world of difference when you got that travel power.
Oh, you'll like this story now.
Okay.
And this happens on Champions. With the presents, where people open it up, and if it's naughty and you have to fight something, they run away and leave.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
I was trying to get the badge for the presents, and this one player, and I'll never forget him, Keldean Champion. He kept going, open the presents. Oh, I can't. I don't want to fight these guys. I'll move on. Oh, I don't want to fight these guys. I'll move on. Obviously, this person did not know that if you do fight the snow beasts, chances of candy canes will come down. And I actually told him, hey, you want to open up these presents and leave and let me pick up all the candy canes that I need to get to my stuff, go right ahead. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I got all the badges that you could purchase with candy canes.
Cool.
We're talking from 2000, you know, the badges from 2004's winter event all the way up to when it closed.
Right.
So I'm going like,
wow,
thanks. I just got up to 998 badges. Thank you. But, you know, and like I said, it's the same over on Champions. They run around, and there's the toys, and you get it all of a sudden. And the thing is, the toys, you know, you get to that right one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going like, why are you running? They're giving you a second chance. At the very least, get the XP if you're not 40.
Right. They don't listen. Okay. I guess everybody's Christmas shopping today, but not much of a crowd. I had the usual crowd here in WCOC Studios, Millennium City, in Champions Online. Silver Regret, Alan and the Teddysons, Mr. Nom Nom and Clarence are hanging out. Thank you, everybody. Mm-hmm. You guys rock.
You also have to consider people who work. You know, some of them have their Christmas parties going on.
Right. I always thought it was weird to have a Christmas party on the 6th of December, but I guess if they could book it, maybe they haven't had a place, they're booking it this early.
Right. All right, I checked Ship of Heroes.
Okay. Yeah, I checked City of Titans, nothing. Really quickly, I talked to an artist friend of mine, Rusty Gilligan. He's not doing so good. So if everybody could send some thoughts and prayers out to him. I talked to him last night. He's not doing so good at all.
Oh.
So if everybody could just send some prayers out to him, that would be very good.
But you did remind me there was a news drop bomb of a news drop. On, what was it, Saturday?
Okay.
In the form of a game
Okay.
And Pogo, you were right there. Once we got to like the third or fourth clue.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
yes. Yes.
You forgot.
Yeah, so some good news. No. It was, yeah, well, I just talked to him last night, and I was hoping for better news because he's the one I'm writing the script for. I started writing the script years ago and just, you know, taking care of my mom. I just never got back to him. I got back to him, and I thought, you know, we'd be able to get the script done, and, you know, and now he's like, take your time. I'm not doing so good. I'm just hoping we can get this thing done finally. So I don't know now. And he's supposed to be breaking the business.
Mm-hmm. But for those
so I don't
who
know
do
now.
Not
so
know. Right. But for those who do not know what's going on, it's no longer Princess Soft Lips. It's Mama Soft Lips.
Yes. Congratulations, Soft Lips.
Yep. She has found out that around summertime, there will be...
No, I was born at the end of August, so I felt bad for my mom's that whole summer.
And she's already having those weird cravings.
Ew.
Yeah. So don't be surprised. It's going like, I'm trying this, and it's a funky combination. It's like it reminded me with my father here. And it's like his niece, my aunt, came over from Norway, and she was with child, and the first time having New York pizza, she spread from tip to crust mayonnaise.
Ooh.
My father was like, anyone want my slice? I'm going like, you know, a little dab, okay, but the from tip to crust, coated.
Wow.
you and me being New Yorkers, we're going like, that's a sin.
I did a pineapple once in a while, but not the crust. Because I have white pizza, but not the crust. But not the mayonnaise. Well,
I'm just glad that it wasn't anchovies. That would have been the worst part.
Oh.
Everything has a life, a purpose in life. Anchovies' purpose is to ruin pizza and AFK'd.
Okay. I remember my brother-in-law, a friend of his, had a pizza place, and we couldn't figure out why he wasn't making that much business, right? Somebody would call asking for a topping, and some toppings he didn't like. Even if you don't like it, as a pizza place owner, you carry the toppings.
Yeah.
Not him. Anchovies. Why the hell would you want anchovies? Those things are disgusting. And every single look at him, I'm like, okay. And the way he talked to the customers, okay, I think I know why you're not making any business now. One,
okay,
you're rude to the customer. Two, you've got to carry this shit for the people who want it.
I mean, New Yorkers have a track record of being rude, but then there's over the top.
he's the owner of the place.
I mean, if he was still alive, you know, we're talking George Steinbrenner, we'd be going like, dude, loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, look, you've got to, you know, when you go into a pizza place, you expect certain things. You know, not when I look on the menu, I expect to see, you know, certain meats on the pizza, certain vegetables on the pizza, or, you know, not, no. Oh, we, onions, are you fucking crazy? That's how we talk to people. Like, what is, I hate onions. Okay, you're not eating a pizza. She's amazing. They said he was open maybe 6 months and he closed down. Said this to him. When you were working for a pizza place, yeah, did you make the pizza in the angel? Yeah, I hated it. Okay, but you made it. Yeah, and I swore if I ever opened my own place. He says, I swore if I opened up my own place, I would never put that stuff on a pizza. Your problem.
What year was this?
Oh, this goes back maybe 10 years.
Okay, so we're not talking the 70s and 80s where you still work with bare hands.
Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no, no. This, yeah, that's what I mean, too. And he goes, you're wearing gloves on top of it.
And, yes, I know that there's a few young people going like, that's not sanitary. That's how it used to be made, barehanded, coated with flour.
Barehanded. Yep.
That's why? So they could get a good spin. You did not go to a true New York pizzeria if the guy behind the counter cannot spin that pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong, Pogo.
If you didn't, I don't know how they did it, but if you didn't watch, every pizza place we went to, or that you went, any good pizza place, they could spin that dough over their head and put it down. Matter of fact, I don't think they do that anymore.
I don't think
they're allowed to. They're not allowed to, are they?
We're talking, they were doing performance art with the pizza dough before sushi stores.
Right, now it's sushi you watch, and they have the tip jar. I think if you want to watch performance, right, like you say, if you want to watch performance art, the food, you have to watch a sushi chef. Or a Japanese restaurant you go to.
I mean, let's face it, and the pizzerias, they had a tall ceiling. Why? They flipped it that high.
Yeah. Now they don't even do that.
It's like, roll. Okay.
Oh, it's like, what? Aren't you going to flip it over your head? I don't even know why they don't do that anymore. As I say this. Hold on. Let me see if I can find an answer.
And someone's making a new hero pizza toe, man. That's when he attacks you by spinning dough of pizzas with razor sharp crust. That would be funny to see.
Right.
Of course, every player that is from New York going like, that's a pizza man.
Okay, well, here's the deal. Throwing pizza dough extends the dough and stretches it into the perfect shape. The crust gets its shape. This is what I'm reading online. The crust gets its shape as the dough spins in the air, while the flour and the air helps to ensure perfectly non-uniform crust. Tender in some spots and crispy in others. That's as of 2015. And that's the importance of tossing pizza dough.
You don't get that no more. It's like another case of this is a symbol that you are a member of Generation X. You remember the pizza dough fly.
Okay, that's what it's called. Right, that's why it's done. Oh, but it doesn't answer why they don't do it anymore. Oh, okay, here we go. Neapolitan pizza chefs think pizza spinning is tacky? What? Okay.
Tacky?
Well, some say... Hold on, wait, that's the headline. Now, this is written in 2016. While some say it improves rise and texture, many Neapolitan pizza chefs see pizza spinning, the skill tossing of raw dough, as unnecessary freestyling. It's like when a football player is good at freestyle, but not the match. Soccer, I guess, says one. James Elliott, co-founder of Neapolitan pizza restaurant Pizza Pilgrims, is standing in the kitchen of his pizzeria in London, Soho, reluctantly teaching me how to spin pizza. Imagine you're holding a football, he says. Now put the pizza on the back of your hands, with the weight falling off the front. I mimic an angry bear claws, Baird. The pizza pretty much falls onto the floor. Unlike Elliot, I don't have the knack. Moments before, he'd been showing off his skills, speed kneading the doughy disc of a pizza base, stretching it out, shuffling it over his knuckles, spinning the base airborne, cartwheeling it around a finger, and then placing it back down onto the metal work topper for a swirl of tomato sauce and a handful of toppings. It was all done in about 30 mesmerizing seconds. As Elliot speaks to me, he is constantly moving and shifting, meeting the steady flow of orders as they pop up on the pass. It's all about the momentum. You end up getting this rhythm going, and spinning is a part of this, he says. I'll always spin it and catch it once for some reason. It becomes a little tick, another thing you do that proves your worth as a pizza chef. Elliot certainly doesn't have much to prove. He learned his skill traveling around Italy in a little van with his brother Tom, visiting famous pizza pie haunts like Pizzeria Da Michele and meeting pizza guru Antonio Esposito on the Ultimate Pizza Odyssey. He learned most in Naples, where pizza is pretty dogmatic, to say the least. For a margarita to be recognized by the True Neapolitan Pizza Association, it has to conform to a 127-page document. There, Elliot tells me, spinning is not as frowned upon as using a rolling pin, but it's up there with pizza sacrilege. People in Naples think of it as a bit unnecessary. Take bartenders with flair when compared to actually making a delicious cocktail, he says. Flair is seen as tacky, almost like you're making up for something. Stateside, they see things differently. At least 8-time world champion pizza acrobat Tony Michael Jordan of pizza throwing Jim McNaughty does. I respect both sides, cooking and the acrobatics, he tells me. Both play a role in our industry, but most people that say spinning is showboating can't do it. There are a lot of haters out there. Jim McNaughty argues that spinning does have a purpose. It gets a pizza base to the size you want, naturally thickens the ends of the base without force. As you toss the dough, the air is drawing out the outer portion of the base, making it crispy on the outside but light and airy on the inside.
Yeah.
It also looks pretty cool. Yeah. People in Naples think of pizza spinning as a bit unnecessary. The finger spinning behind the back trickery of hardcore pizza spinning makes for pretty mad viewing, too. A U.S. pizza team star Nino Coniglio demonstrates. You know what they say? No one can toss a pie like a Brooklyn guy. Curiously, though, Coniglio's pizza throwing mentor, Domenico DeMarco, an Italian native whose pie Anthony Bourdain has called the best of the best, doesn't spin anymore. In 2009, he told the New York Times, it's something you do when you're a young man. You have to do something to attract the people. It doesn't do any good for the pizza. Back at Pizza Pilgrims in London, Elliot says spinning is a New York thing. The only practical reason I like to spin a pizza is to get a round pizza. If you spin it from the middle, spinning and catching, you get a feel for whether it's spinning around or with a kink, he explains. It bypasses the brain, and your hand goes, yeah, that's right. In New York, especially with the big slice guys, there's more practical implications because of the size of the pizza. He then introduced me to Ivan, who's been listening and shaking his head, a young Italian pizza chef with a tattoo of a margarita on his upper left arm. Ivan is a Neapolitan pizza nut who grew up in the business and has ended up, as Elliot says, so many Italian pizza chefs do, married to the job. Ivan doesn't spin. Instead, he stretches out the dough for the base using a technique called schiaffo, or slap. Spinning, I not like too much, he says, slapping the dough down onto the steel top in disdain. It's like when a football player is good at freestyle, but in a match, he is not good. In Naples, pizza is like art. Yeah, I say, wiping my brow. I don't spin either. This post originally appeared on Munchies in July 2015.
That's
what they say.
And that's why we don't have a real large anymore.
Yeah.
Remember the large pizza?
Oh,
Lord's Pizza had there was no choice. The crust was going to bend on the side of the boxes.
Yeah. That large did not barely fit in the box. You cannot close the box of a true Lord's pizza. They had to tape it shut, staple it. I don't know. Use whatever they could find.
As soon as you got home,
you had to take two pieces out to try and close this box again. You cannot find room in your refrigerator to put the box in. You had to take the whole pizza out, put them put a piece on each paper plate, and find room in the thing in your refrigerator to make room. But you cannot find room. If your refrigerator wasn't big enough, you were not putting this pizza box in your refrigerator.
Hell no, it was. And also, another pizza rule of New York, you do not use the knife and fork.
Oh,
you
God,
do not.
No.
You take the slice and you fold.
You bend it in half.
Yeah. A gentle fold.
And that bottom and the tip would always bend down.
Mm-hmm.
That's how big
that's
it was. If the tip doesn't bend down, it's not big enough. I'll tell you what, though.
Where it's bended on the box, that's called the grease catcher.
I'll tell you what. I ordered two pieces of white pizza. They are still big. Like, we figured that, like, if you ordered, like, a whole pizza like that, it would be the large white pizza. I swear there's a place around here that you get the big white pizza like that. Like, a white pizza, it's like, holy shit. It's like each slice is like 1.5 slices big.
I'm just waiting for one person to go, like, it's not like Chicago pizza. Yeah, well, Chicago has its own style.
Chicago has deep dish. I've had Chicago deep dish. Chicago deep dish is very good. As long as you acknowledge it's Chicago deep dish. And that's another style of pizza. But it's not New York. Chicago deep dish, you have to eat with a knife and a fork.
You can still fold it.
You can pick it up and eat it, but it starts – if you get a lot of toppings on it, you run into trouble when you start out.
You get a bold pizza.
you get it in a pan. You get it served in a pan. So it's hard to eat like that. So
I have done it,
and
there's been a couple of times where all of a sudden all the cheese and the toppings are in my mouth, and I'm looking at a bold pizza.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like it was just like, oh, okay. Because I was on a train ride with somebody from Chicago, and I asked her, I was like, so when you eat deep dish, she goes, always with a fork, and always, she goes, to be honest, if you get a lot of, it depends on the restaurant you go to. And I said, I had a Chicago Uno. She goes, oh, yeah, that started in Chicago. And she goes, if you get the Supreme, you get like 5 or 6 toppings on it. She goes, if you get that, you have to use a fork and a knife. She goes, especially to start out with the first piece. And they all say the weirdest thing. They start from the crust to the middle. It's like, really? It's like, yeah. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh. I was like, yeah, you need New Yorkers. I was like, oh. And everybody on the train looked at her. I was like, hold on. I've had this before when I was younger. When I was a kid, I had a Chicago Uno pizza. I was like, it was the weirdest thing, though. She goes, but you guys have better bagels. And she goes, it's the water. Because if you have a bagel outside of New York, I might as well go to the store and get a Lender's.
Well, welcome to Paragon Radio Cooking Show.
Seriously, if you guys aren't from New York and you've never had it, I think Lender's now makes New York style bagels and they're like really big. Yeah, a real New York bagel is still bigger than that. I've had the New York Lender's, New York's, quote-unquote, New York-style bagel. No, I've had one. It's twice as big as that. You need to eat two of those for a New York style bagel. I've had, and we looked at it, it's like, no. All right, this is what happened. Last night, for some reason, 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. I had to go to the bathroom. I said, fine. I came back. We have our yearly visitation of raccoons in the attic. We've had them for weeks. Last night, it was pouring rain out. They must have invited some of their friends into the attic. They were moving shit around up there. I don't know what they were doing, but it was making all kinds of noise. I couldn't fall asleep again. And they were up there till about noon because it was pouring. I'm like, are you serious? I need to get some sleep. So finally, things calmed down. I'm laying here from 12 to 2, just like in a light sleep, realizing at 2 o'clock, I never set the show up. As soon as I set the show up, I was done. I fell asleep till about 5:30. So I fell asleep at midnight, 4 hours of sleep, exhausted. I passed out at 2 o'clock. Somebody put the heat up on this end of the house. So I'm just exhausted. On top of that, I realized I haven't eaten all day.
Oh, I just got news that came across my desk. Congratulations
yes.
to DJ Amber Blue.
Oh?
Yes, she also not only does DJ for Dawn Radio, she does some stuff on her own on Second Light. She's been listed
okay.
in the top 40 DJs in Second Life.
Oh, congratulations. Is she pregnant too?
No, she's not pregnant,
oh,
no.
Okay. When I used to work at Verizon, oh, that was weddings. It was funny. It was like when somebody was getting married at Verizon, because we worked with a lot of women, it was like it always came in threes. Like if somebody was getting married within that week, we would find out two more wedding announcements. We're coming, like two more engagements or pregnancies.
Oh,
so.
Oh well, the running gag when we announced the with Selfless is now, yeah, I don't know if she's going to be welcome over at Bunny Night because once one woman gets pregnant, it's
right.
friends.
Yep. Right. Like bunnies. Oh, my God. So who knows? Who knows? Okay.
Right,
I have
I can
some
tell you
stories.
Right, Rain doesn't know yet. At least that's to my knowledge, so it's going to be like...
Oh, no.
Guess who's going to be on the couch for a while?
Goodness gracious. Okay. I want to do this. Remember last week I read some things from the League of Regrettable Superheroes?
Yep.
I could do it again.
All right.
I want to do from the Golden Age, so pick a number 1 through 123.
Let's go. Well, you said 123. Well, I checked out how old Walt Disney would be if he was still alive. We'll go
right.
to 121.
Okay, that puts us closest to number 120. Okay, we'll do that one next. Hold on, I'm getting there. Page 120 gives us, Vagabond Prince. A hasty foot is a dangerous thing. It is first to feel trouble's sharp sting. He was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. He debuted, I'm fixing my glasses here now. Hold up. Ah! Okay, there we go. Black Cat number 7 of Harvey Comics in August last September, 1947, could be mistaken for a doorman, a nutcracker, or a hamburger chain mascot. Okay. Wow. Among the crowded comics racks, the best way for a new superhero to compete is to make sure he stands out. And if the Vagabond Prince did anything particularly and the costume of his, he stood out. A creation of the acclaimed team of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, the Vagabond Prince ended up being one of their lesser but most unusual collaborations. Perhaps first among the qualities that distinguished the character from his competitors was his mode of dress. Decked out more like a band leader than a crime fighter, the unpowered royal slugged his way through a pair of adventurers while wearing something resembling a doorman's uniform, accentuated with a domino mask. Pairing his strange getup with a peculiar patter, the Vagabond Prince made a habit of speaking in a cod Elizabethan manner, peppered with terrible doggerel. Did ever yon moon glow so bright to shone upon such a sight? He asked on one occasion between such archaic oaths as odds bodkin and by my dagger. Fact check, the Vagabond Prince did not carry a dagger. Also unusual, while other superheroes typically got along with a single sidekick, the Prince was known to pal around with two. The team's junior partner, donning a less dressed-up version of the Prince's unconventional outfit, was the Chief Justice. Its third member was the sometimes bumbling Jester, who dressed accordingly. The Jester wholeheartedly subscribed to the same pseudo-Shakespearean dialogue that the Vagabond Prince occasionally employed, but the Chief Justice was having none of it. "Aw, wet potato chips, Prince," he utters on one occasion,
wet
signifying
potato.
His distaste. "Wet potato, aw, wet potato chips." For a civilian career, the Vagabond Prince, in his unmasked identity of Ned Oakes, was far removed from the typical superhero day jobs in journalism, law, or science. He was a writer for a greeting card company, and unlike the bored playboys who traipsed across rooftops, foiling crime, lived in a tenement slum. Poverty was at the root of the saga. It is revealed in his belated origin story, unseen until a recent collection. The strip was canceled before the tale could be published. Then Ned Oakes is the legal owner of the land on which is built all of Esten City, his hometown. Crooks discover this fact ahead of Ned and try to force him to sign over the land. They leave him badly beaten and abandoned in Skid Row, okay, I'm almost done, where local bums christen Oakes with his superhero moniker. A slum kid named Roger believes his story, and their pair teams up to punish the crooks. It is that conflict from which the Vagabond Prince and Chief Justice are born. Okay.
Wet potato chips.
Oh, wet potato chips. I never loved those days. Okay, hold on. There's another one there. I'll read. Okay, hold on. How about, I don't think we read this one. How about this one? There's Zippo. I'll need my full speed to climb this pit, just like the motorcycles in carnivals. This one was created by Pierce Rice, debuted in Clue Comics, number 1, Hillman Publications, January 1943. Performance? 40 miles per gallon highway or 28 miles per gallon in a city. Okay, to make your mark in the highly competitive field of superheroics, you need a gimmick, particularly if your primary power is super speed. The ability to move at jet-like velocity is such a common characteristic among the cape and spandex set that it's generally appended to a hero's overall abilities. If being fast is your only thing, you'll have to put your own spin on your speed, or else become just another Johnny Quick-come-lately, which is exactly what private investigator and part-time inventor Joe Blair does when he creates his high-speed alter ego Zippo, the Motorman on wheels, according to his own press, balancing on carborundum wheels and equipped with a blow-the-belt exoskeleton outfitted with a powerful compressed air engine. Zippo turns into a veritable human meteor, traveling at ground speeds of as much as 65 miles an hour. What a rush! Although he might seem better suited for the extreme sports circuit, Zippo manages to carve out an impressive 8-issue crime-fighting streak in the pages of Clue Comics, practically a lifetime compared to some other short-lived heroes. It's worth noting, though, that his adventures are always conveniently solved by the clever application of his high-horsepower gizmo. Along with the inevitable high-speed chases, Zippo seems to always find a smooth, flat surface upon which his wheels make of him an exceptional opponent, whether on a high network of steel girders, the side of a massive concrete dam, or even train tracks or telephone wires. And when confined in a space that constrains his movement, Zippo has an additional trick up his pants legs. His durable wheels can whiz fast enough to cut through steel. Wow, they could whiz that fast, huh? Also helping Zippo's... Oh, good Lord. Also helping Zippo's batting average is that, defying the usual comic book formula, he never fought foes who claimed super speed of their own. Typically, he pitted his spinning wheels and pumping pistons against garden variety crooks, and thugs, occasionally turning his attention to the only kind of super-powered foe he tended to fight, weird beast men. Between a scientist-turned-caveman and would-be world-conqueror Professor Schooner, the hulking hairy dwarf called the Fly, the tubby but cat-like lynx, and horrifically ugly goblin, Zippo, claimed an ugly rogues gallery that he could literally run rings around. One character at a time, Pooh Comics began to cycle out its original lineup of superheroes and replace them with spy, war, and horror features. As if in reverse alphabetical order, the first character shown the door was Zippo. One can imagine the high-speed hero crouched in his signature traveling posture, vanishing into the sunset, unable to outrace his own cancellation. Good Lord. Let's see. So Zippo, the speedy new crime-busting motorman on wheels, with a flip of his belt throttle, he could send himself roaring along like the fastest motor car. And yes, on his belt, he has a throttle switch and cylinders housing pistons on his belt. What I find funny is they bend at the knee, so how do the pistons still work? It shows the side view. There's a joint at the knee, and then there's driving rods from the knee down. But how do the pistons still work?
I have no clue.
That, the things, I don't know. Hold on, we got time for one more, right?
All right, okay.
Another one from the Golden Age. How about Stardust, the Super Wizard? You are now in the power of Stardust. This one was created by Fletcher Hanks, debuted in Fantastic Comics, number one, Fox Features.
Wait a minute, Cody Rhodes was in the Golden Age?
Apparently, maybe this is where they got the idea for Stardust. Doesn't look like that Cody Rhodes. Doesn't look like Cody Rhodes' Stardust character. Hobbies: cruel and unusual punishment and neck exercises. He does have a rather thick neck. He has a really thick neck, though. That's what's really funny about the way they drew him. A good superhero is the product of a robust imagination, and if Stardust, the Super Wizard, had nothing else going for him, he certainly sprang from an abundance of ingenuity. But the best-known creation of Fletcher Hanks, whose brief career in comics secured his legacy as one of the most singularly unusual creators in the field, Stardust ran as a backup feature in the aptly titled Fantastic Comics, first published in the year after Superman's debut. Stardust appeared on the heels of a cavalcade of Men of Steel imitators. At first glance, he might have even seemed to be just another all-around Ubermensch in a blue suit. But even a cursory glance at an average Stardust story, although it's a stretch to call any Stardust story average, quickly reveals the differences between the Super Wizard and all the other Johnny-come-latelys. Like Hank's famous creation, Phantoma, that's on page 50 of this book, which we'll read next week, or if we have time. Let's see here. Stardust was omnipotent and seemed to delight in crafting bizarre, even surreal punishments to foil his enemies. The closest thing to a Stardust origin story occurs in his first appearance, when criminal and spy organizations operating within the United States listened to an ominous news broadcast announcing the Super Wizard's imminent arrival on Earth. Besides warning of a merciless cleanup of spies and grade-A racketeers, the program fills in the reader on Stardust's bona fides in advance of his arrival. His scientific use of rays has made him a master of space and planetary forces, begins to report. The gas of a certain star has made him immune to heat or cold. The announcer next describes how Stardust carries artificial lungs that enables him to breathe safely under any condition. He uses new spectral rays that can make him invisible or as bright as the sun. He wears a flexible star metal skin controlled through rays from a distant sun and rendering him indestructible. An intriguing combination of colorful descriptions and outright nonsense. This list is only the tip of the iceberg. Finally landing on Earth, the towering Stardust manipulates a sheet of falling missiles, hangs Crooks motionless in midair, and summons the bones of the dead to leer at their killers? And that is only the beginning. Battling such gory characters as the Emerald Men of Asperus, the Crooks Rip the Blood and Wolf Eye, and the planet-murdering Mad Giant, Stardust rarely revisits the same punishment twice. He condemns a gang of thieves to a planet of gold and diamonds on the cusp of a black night that will last for centuries, turns fifth columnists into ice or rats, and causes Crooks to hover in the air so he could fly them at a speed sufficient to turn them to ash. Holy shit. Jesus. A fine example of Stardust's punishments is the one he arranges for Mastermind Destructo. Stardust inflates the head of the would-be murderer to the point that his body withers away. Then he throws the head through the space pocket of living death, where the headless headhunter, the hugest giant in the universe, resides, affixing Destructo's severed noggin to the unoccupied space between his own shoulders. The giant absorbs the still-living fiend whole. For a super wizard, whose missions often took him to deep space and strange worlds, Stardust had a particular affinity for the United States, often rooting out spies and saboteurs and paying particular attention to the nation's economy. The final panel of his adventures depicts a world-spanning broadcast announcing that Stardust saves the U.S. government from financial ruin. This he accompanied by feeding a crook named Slant Eye to a golden octopus monster.
Oh, God.
Wow!
I don't want to hear any complaints about today's comic books after hearing that one.
I know, really. Editor's note. They posted an editor's note, too. Junior partners have always been the rage in superhero comics, but Stardust took the idea a few steps further by establishing Stardust Sixth Column Clubs across the country. The organization's young members received pills that gave them a fraction of Stardust's strange powers, metal-repelling ray belts for flight, and super wizard costumes to aid in their defense of America.
Somebody was on some good drugs that day. That's like, man, today's comics are too violent. Really?
Yeah. Well, hold on. Here's page 48 of this column. Here's one of the things now. He's saying, you are going to the floating prison of eternal ice. You shall become a frozen space site, able to see and think, but always motionless. In your frozen condition, you'll live forever to think about your crimes. Enter the ice chamber. Good Lord. Keep thinking, Jip. Meanwhile, life on the Earth has returned to normal. And Stardust goes back to his own asteroid. In the next issue, Stardust will battle the Super Fiend of Lepus.
It's for you.
Yeah, apparently. Not taking it. So there you go. That's a taste of some of the League of Regrettable Superheroes. Half-baked heroes from comic book history. And that was during the Golden Age. Yes, there was... Oh, my God.
Remember, this was meant for kids.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be simple and pure. Holy shit. That's why it only lasted 8. Okay, hold on. Okay. I want to read this Phantom that they mentioned. Hold on, let me take care of this. Now, don't any of you go making up this character, because this is just ridiculous.
Oh, no.
All right. So okay. Phantom, as you mentioned. Remember, he mentioned Phantom.
Right.
Phantom wills it, created by Fletcher Hanks. Oh, he didn't create it as his own name. He created it as Barclay Flagg in Jungle Comics number 2, Fiction House, February 1940. Complexion, definitely a summer, except when she's transformed her head into a blazing skull.
All right,
and
so
was, okay.
We have a woman that was Ghost Rider before Ghost Rider. Okay.
Apparently, she preceded Wonder Woman by more than a year and is arguably the first female superhero in comic books. But chances are you've never heard of Phantom, Mystery Woman of the Jungle. Statuesque, white-skinned, blonde-haired, and blue-eyed. At first glance, Phantom appears to share much in common with the other animal-protecting, resource-preserving, leopard-skin-clad jungle queens who followed in the footsteps of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. What makes Phantom different from her sorority sisters of the savannah, however, has a great deal to do with her creator. Fletcher Hanks is a legendary and notorious figure in comicdom, having produced the entirety of his strange, alarming, and unpredictable catalog of stories in a brief 3-year period before vanishing from the medium. His comics were typified both by bold, stiff, yet informal artwork that recalled woodcut prints and by stories in which near omnipotent protagonists devised cruel and Byzantine punishments for their enemies. Hanks remains one of the most mysterious figures in comics, despite a recently renewed surge of interest in his work, due in large part to a pair of excellent collections edited by Paul Karasik and published by Fantagraphics Books. Yes, you can get a reprint of all his books, including Stardust, the Super Wizard. Where was I here? I just made that up. A reportedly troubled individual, Hanks produced complicated and bizarre creations and seemed to reflect his inner turmoil in stories that resemble fever dreams, unearthly figures who emerged from mysterious realms and visited elaborate punishments on their enemies with the order of the day, like Hanks' other best-remembered creation, Stardust, the Super Wizard, which we just read about. The essentially all-powerful Phantom was capable of supernatural acts of bizarre chastisement, executed without mercy on plunderers, killers, and would-be tyrants who threatened her domain. She banishes one villain to a dinosaur-populated asteroid, transforms a pair of jewel thieves into creatures resembling a cross between grasshoppers and dandelion leaves, and in one spectacular feat, demolishes a squadron of military bomber planes and all occupants therein with living sandstorms and a flying formation of jungle lions. Wow. No less shocking was Phantom's physical transformation. At rest, she appeared as a gorgeous woman with smoky, mysterious eyes. When angered, however, her skin adopted a sky blue pallor and her lovely face burned away to reveal a furious, blazing skull, although she kept her luxurious golden locks in either state. Let's see. When Hanks left the feature halfway through its run, subsequent writers took the opportunity to tone down the character's extravagances, thank God. She was quickly reduced from terrifying, omnipotent Avenger to the queen of a hidden jungle empire, left to wrestle snakes and panthers with nothing more than her all-too-human cunning and strength, just like all the other girls in the jungle. Now it says here, roll call. Phantom may have been the first female superhero, but she had plentiful company soon enough, from non-powered heroines like the Black Cat, Lady Luck, Phantom Lady, and the Woman in Red, to superpowered female crime fighters such as Canadian superheroine Nelvana of the Northern Lights, which is in this book, and the powerful Miss Victory. Nearly omnipotent superheroines are uncommon in Golden Age comic books, but a few other powerful goddess types include Venus, Diana the Huntress, Farrah, and the Sorceress of Zoom.
And nowadays, the Sorceress of Zoom is the tech help of the Zoom talk.
Yes. Let's see here. Okay, so the comic book page reads, Vantima, the most remarkable woman ever known, has such keen insight that she could see all that happens in the jungle. She devotes her great abilities to protecting the jungle born. She sees a strange white man heading for a secret spot far in the heart of the jungle. She reads his thoughts and finds that he is in a quest of the boiling mud pit. He has learned that a small temple stands in the middle of the boiling mud pit. This temple is very sacred to the natives because it contains the royal headpiece of a very famous chief who once ruled all the jungle tribes. That's all it says.
And Texas goes, I wonder if the old Nelvana animation studio was named after her.
Oh, there is something here. Something with some trolls in a cave. He suddenly finds himself. Oh, okay. I guess it's the guy. He suddenly finds himself in a cavern. The rock floor starts sliding as if on skids. He rides deep within the earth. A volcano. There's the crater. Strange creatures step out of the darkness. Vantima appears again. You shall become one of them and eat mud and fire for the rest of your days. You shall never see the jungle again, Vantima says. He says, become like them? Heavens, no! You shall never steal again, for here you'll find nothing to steal. Farewell, you fool. And Vantima returns to her jungle home. In the next issue, Vantima comes to New York. Oh, in case you were wondering, Jungle Comics went on sale every fifth of them every month.
Well, we got about 8 minutes.
There you go. So DJ Texas is coming up next.
Well, on Dawn Radio, not Block Talk.
I'm sorry, Dawn. Did I say Block Talk? I meant Dawn Radio. Sorry, Dawn Radio. Embrace the Dawn. Sorry, we're on Block Talk Radio right now. Sorry about that. Guys, I got like no sleep. I had an exhausting night last, I don't know how long. It's just been a... Go to dawnradio.com next for DJ Texas show.
.org.
About 7 minutes. Did I say .com? I'm sorry. Dawnradio.org. I know these things. I'm just really... I am so out of it today. Holy mackerel.
In other words, give me a B. Give me another B. Give me another B. Give me another B.
Yeah,
give me another
that's
B.
Exactly.
What does that spell?
Yeah. So really... All right. Yeah, exactly. All right. So really quickly, I got time for news stories here. Tom Holland reacts to reports of a new MCU Spider-Man trilogy. Spider-Man No Way Home is the last solo film covered by Marvel Studios and Sony Pictures' current deal to share custody of Spidey. However, producer Amy Pascal went out of her way to announce a new trilogy of MCU Spider-Man movies earlier this week. Also indicated that Tom Holland would be back as Peter Parker Spider-Man. That was a surprise since Holland has said that his contract was up after No Way Home and that he didn't want to play the role when he was in his 30s. Note that Holland is 25 now, but he's already headlined Spidey films and guest starred in three others within his last 5 years. During an appearance on the French talk show, Quotidien, I hope I said that right, Holland addressed Pascal's comments and the subsequent hype they generated. Listen, all I'll say is we have some very, very exciting things to be talking about, said Holland. I don't know what those things are or what they will transpire to mean, but it looks like it's an incredibly bright future ahead, and as I said before, Spider-Man will forever live in me. Regardless of Pascal's remarks, THR is reporting that there are no official plans for a trilogy at this phase. Pascal does have a history of speaking out of turn. As an example, Pascal's comments about Venom's relationship to the MCU led to Marvel's Kevin Feige becoming a meme when he reacted to her. So a new Spider-Man trilogy is far from certain at the moment. Okay, that's it. Neither Sony nor Marvel is blind to the response that No Way Home has received. Advanced ticket sales have crashed several sites, and the sequel is already poised to be one of the year's biggest hits. Continuing this collaboration is in the best interest of both Sony and Marvel. Spider-Man No Way Home hits theaters on December 17th. Okay, so we know that's a definite. Spider-Man No Way Home comes out December 17th. There could or could not be another trilogy, and Tom Holland could or could not be starring in them. I do know this also. HBO Max's Batgirl movie has started production. Barbara Gordon is officially on her way to HBO Max. Directors Adil El-Arbi and Bilal Fallah have announced that today, which was Tuesday, November 30th, last Tuesday, they've announced that marks the start of filming on their highly anticipated Batgirl movie. They celebrated the occasion by sharing the same photo on their respective Instagram accounts. The image also reveals a key detail about the version of Barbara fans will meet when the film eventually premieres. Officer Barbara Gordon, it has that clap thing, the Hollywood, you know, the movie clap thing that they use. It's the scene marker, the marker clap. It looks like Batgirl is taking cues from Batman Beyond and Titans by making Barbara a cop in the film, where she works under, well, whether she works under her father, Jim Gordon, as a GCPD officer, or if she's stationed at another precinct altogether, remains to be seen. In the comics, Commissioner Gordon objected to his daughter following in his footsteps. So it should be interesting to see how this affects their relationship on screen. The clapboard, that's what it's clapboard, in the photo also confirms that John Matheson is working on Batgirl as the film's director of photography. Matheson already has some experience shooting superhero movies, having tackled X-Men First Class, Logan, and the upcoming Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. He also received a pair of Oscar nominations for his work on Gladiator and The Phantom of the Opera. In the Heights, star Leslie Grace is headlining Batgirl as the title character. So far, the supporting cast includes Brendan Fraser as the movie's villain and J.K. Simmons reprising his Justice League role as Commissioner Gordon. Jacob Scipio also has a mystery role in the film. HBO hasn't announced a release date for Batgirl, but it likely will premiere in 2022. And news from Mordek. Mordek is like this one, really quickly. The new Batman escape rooms are opening in Paris next year. The Dark Knight is about to try his hand at the escape room craze. Unfortunately, many fans will have to shell out for a plane ticket in order to experience it themselves. Via Collider, Warner Brothers themed entertainment and DC are teaming up with Dama Dreams on several new escape rooms based on the world of Batman. The attraction is currently scheduled to open in Paris sometime in 2022. Dubbed Batman Gotham City Adventures, the installation comprises three unique game spaces inside a single 3,000 square meter building. Each room covers 350 square meters and will also include exclusive storylines, characters, and more. The creators aren't sharing which of Bruce Wayne's haunts will be recreated for the rooms. However, guests can also expect appearances by several live actors to guarantee a more interactive visit to the DC Universe. Dama Dreams is a French-based company known for its immense immersive gaming experiences, which includes other escape rooms throughout the country. According to the website, these venues pull in over 65,000 visitors every year. So it sounds like WB and DC picked the right partner for Gotham City Adventures. But, of course, Warner Brothers Themed Entertainment also knows a thing or two about immersive fans and their favorite fictional worlds, including Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, and Friends. To register for more information, you can visit Gotham City Adventures' official website. Okay, there you go. I just want to get a couple of news things out there.
With a minute ago, yes.
Okay, thank you, Ray, for tuning in tonight. Sorry, I seemed a little out of it. We'll see you all next week for more Paragon Radio. Go watch those TV superhero TV shows, superhero movies, read those comic books, superhero novels, et cetera, et cetera. Hope you're getting ready for the holidays. Have a happy and a safe one, everybody. Ed Viking, you have anything you'd like to say in closing, sir?
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie. And go tune in to dawnradio.org for DJ Texas show coming up in just less than 10 seconds. We made it. All right. And thank you all for tuning in. Everybody, without you guys, it would just be us talking to ourselves. Ah, okay. Ooh, and I just made it back here. Wow, I was just about to log out of – I was reading so much news, I was just about to be logged out of – Champions Online. Okay, thank you, everybody. See you next time. Okay, I think that's it.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right, I'm going to end the show. You can go watch DJ Texas' show. All right, ending the episode. Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah.